With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood.
Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with the Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC. Member SIPC, a registered broker-dealer.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know what that sound is, Tommy?
What you got there?
That's the sound of crashing and burning. And in this show, we're going to be talking about two different topics that have a common theme.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about some of the cars this year that kind of crashed and burned, as well as some cars that are dying this year and therefore might be a good buy.
Yeah, both of these categories of cars could be something that if you're out there shopping for a new car, you might want to consider because the crash and burns aren't selling. Of course, there's a reason for that. And the cars that are going away are going away, so dealers want to get them off the lot so they can also be gone and be discounted. So you want to start with crash and burns?
Yeah, so these are cars that I think were highly anticipated or very controversial, and then when they finally hit the market, just kind of landed with a bit of a dud. And the obvious one, which we should start out with...
Hold on. Let me thank our Patreons first.
Okay.
Thank you, Patreons, for supporting us. Your support these days is more important than ever. We really appreciate the fact that you join us for these live shows. You get extra content. You help support the channel by donating a small amount each week and letting me and Tommy sit here and go around the country reviewing new cars. So thank you very much. And if you want to be part of the TFL, I'm not going to call it TFL Nation. Would you call it TFL Nation?
I would just say the community.
If you want to be part of the community, if you want to get information, reviews ahead of time, if you want to be...
you get bonus content. You also get sneak peeks at what's coming up before everybody else does.
If you want to be in the know...
Sure, there you go.
Then support us. Head on over to patreon.com/TFLcar.
Yeah, you got it. So this podcast would not be possible without our patrons. We also do bonus episodes of Car-ish most weeks. So you can check those out and see what's going on with the Car-ish crew. And like you said, get all the stuff early.
All right, let's start with the crash and burns. The first one that we have on our list, you actually went and reviewed. You went on the program, so you want to spill the beans on that one?
Well, I think that the Dodge Charger is kind of the big obvious one, right? So that's the fully electric Dodge Charger Daytona, which, you know, really in volume launched this year and then immediately kind of started sitting on lots and had to be discounted in a big way. But the mistake that Dodge made is, of course, they launched this car as the full electric only. They saw the reaction to the electric car, and then they really pushed hard to get the gasoline model out as soon as possible. And that's the car I just went and checked out, what was it, last month. Case and I went to Detroit for Roadkill Nights and got some time in the new gasoline charger because the electric one just didn't find an audience.
Well, so first of all, let's start with this. I think it's a very good-looking car. I think Ralph and his team... did a great job in styling it. I love that little wing on the front, which, by the way, isn't there if you get the gas version. If you get the so-called six-pack, the six-cylinder. But I think it's just a very, very good car. I finally got to drive it with my man Cole, who's behind the computer there, a month ago at the our MAP annual get-together. There is me driving it. And I actually like the car from a design point of view. It's a handsome car. And I think the problem is with this car, as Cole pointed out, because I was looking for a hook, literally. You'll get that reference in a second for the video. It's like trying to sell hooks to fish. They just don't want it.
Yeah, I mean,
the audience for this does not want electric cars.
Yeah, right. I mean, and that was the obvious kind of head scratcher with this is the crowd for the old Charger and Challenger V8 models, right? I'm talking RT, SRT, Hellcat, all the old crowd, right? They with every bone in their body hated electric cars, right? That was the anti-Tesla crowd through and through. And then Dodge launches their new performance coupe and sedan as the electric version first, which was a huge miss. And like, I understand the performance was actually very good, especially compared to like 0-60 in the real world. This car would kill an old Hellcat, right? All-wheel drive. It had a lot of horsepower, 0-60 in about 3.1 seconds. So, I mean, it was a very impressive performer. But at the end of the day, it was still an electric car. You're trying to sell it to burnout-loving, V8-loving Americans, and that just was not going to work.
I think there was an obvious precursor to this, that if Dodge had been paying attention, I think they were kind of locked into it. So I think people, even at the company, knew that this thing was going to be a rough sell. But when you think about the crowd that buys American muscle cars, specifically Dodge cars, it's the same crowd that buys Harleys, right? And Harley tried the same thing with the Livewire.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a good point.
And that didn't end well either.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's the sound and the experience of the internal combustion is such an essential key ingredient to this pie that it didn't have. Now, the interesting thing is, like, Dodge had been planning from the get-go to offer gasoline models alongside the Daytona, and they basically rushed to get those out, and it's not official. Note, it's not official, but we all know that the V8's going to end up back in the Charger.
Hemi, baby.
Yeah, so Case and I went to Michigan to check out the inline six version, which comes in two different versions. There's a low and a high output. I think it's 420 and 550 horsepower. And that is more on the right track, especially when you keep in mind, you know, the performance of that vehicle. The fact it's standard all-wheel drive, I think, is a nice improvement over the old one. The interior quality feels really good, and it'll hold a 4x8 sheet of plywood. It's that big. I think that this is the right car for America. I just think they should have put the V8 in it before the Hurricane. But this was under that. I mean, what we're seeing, Dad, is all of the remnants of the old Stellantis leadership. So you kind of have three eras, right, in the modern age. You had the FCA era.
Yep.
Which was Marchionne and Manley,
yep.
Right? That was the Hellcat Everything era. Then under Stellantis, we had the new guy, Tavares, who was kill all the V8s, right? And you kind of understand, if he's coming from a European perspective and he was looking at emissions and Euro laws, that made sense, right? But that never made sense for America. Even when CAFE was still a thing, Americans just loved V8. So he killed all the V8s. Those are the cars that we've been seeing. So that was like RHO Ram. That was electric Charger. The electric Wagoneer, I think, to some extent, was under him. And now that we're under a new era of Stellantis leadership,
An old era. Kaniskis
An old era. You're right. Yeah. We're going to start to see a lot more V8s. But the product cycles are long enough, right, Dad, where it's not going to happen overnight. I mean, this car probably started design process 8-10 years ago. So it's going to take some time for that stuff to come back.
Well, look, I think you made two really good points. The first point is, if you love American muscle and you love American sedans, this is a big car. It's hard to underestimate, especially the four-door, how big this car is. This is a true American sedan. And because it's so long and so big and actually so heavy with the battery, it rides really well.
Well, the thing is, you say especially with the four-door, they're the same size.
Yeah.
So the two-door and the four-door have the same profile and roofline.
Thank you for correcting me, but you missed my bigger point, which is that it rides really well.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
It just has a really great ride.
In the same way a freight train rides really well.
And remember,
it's just got a lot of mass.
Yes, which is fine. Freight trains are comfortable, I think. Anyway, the other point here is you can get this car at a bargain, not the gas one. But if you want the electric one, especially if you get one before the end of the month, right? September is when all of the credits go away. And here in Colorado, you not only get the $7,500, mm-hmm. but you also get the $4,000 state credit. And, you know, I've seen these things starting to lease at like $399, $299 a month. And that's really cheap considering that this is an $80,000 car if you don't get the base model.
Well, so I was looking at they discontinued the RT.
Yeah.
Because that one wasn't selling at all in the Daytona. And
I'm sure it's still out there.
Yeah, you can still find them out there. Last time I checked a few weeks ago, you could pick up an RT if you've traveled to someplace like Wyoming where they really don't want them. You can roll out before taxes and fees at like $39,000, $38,000. And you're still dealing with a car 0-60 in 5 seconds, right? You still get the big battery. You still get all-wheel drive. And I think the RT, too, you can pay to have upgraded to more power because it's the same electric motor from the fast one to the standard one, yeah. The Scat Pack. Yeah. So that's a lot of car. The Scat Packs were like, they were marked down like 12-ish grand. So they were like 50.
I saw them for more than that. Even like 15, I saw.
So the lease deals were good, but the problem with the lease deals, like you can lease them for $150 a month, I think.
Yeah.
But it's a tiny, tiny mileage. It's like 5,000 miles a year. So the lease deals don't really
just
make sense.
Just enough to take them to the drag strip and just, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, the way to do this, plus they launched it with that Fretsonic sound, which was a mistake because people didn't like that.
That's a whole other thing. Now, the other point I was going to make, and this kind of leads me to the second car, Cole, and you can look this second car up in the video I did from Goodwood. Because we haven't talked about this, so I'm going to surprise you with it, because this one has crashed and not burned yet. But the second point I want to make is I fear in the auto industry, and this is over and over again, you only have one shot of making a first impression.
Okay.
And if that first impression is bad, it's really hard. And I think this is true for actually this one, too. Even with the six-pack out, I think it's already kind of tainted with the whiff of electricity. But the car I'm talking about might be the biggest crash and burn of the British car manufacturing world. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
It hasn't burned yet. It has definitely crashed.
The Electra?
No. Come on. No. Starts with a J, ends with an R.
Oh, the Jaguar?
The Jaguar 00 prototype. That is a car that may be DOA, dead on arrival. I have read and seen and interviewed people in the UK about this car, and there is just so much hate already. And you see it from anywhere from Top Gear, where they just did a story where they interviewed like designers about the car and like professional car designers, and they said that the thing is just slab-sided and not resolved, all the way to the people I interviewed. And I actually like it. I think it's actually really cool. But because it's electric and because it is so way out there in terms of its design language, in terms of its look, people just, wow, hate it. This is probably the most polarizing vehicle since the Cybertruck.
Yeah, I mean, and then you've got the baggage that kind of came with that rebrand that people hated as well. But to their credit, like if they could produce this car that looks like this, I do genuinely think it would be a very interesting design that doesn't exist. Kind of the shooting brake, really long, really wide profile. I think that there's a lot of potential here. I've got a really controversial one.
Well, let's talk about this one before you go to the controversial one.
Okay.
I mean, they haven't built it yet. The word that I've heard is a smart marketing on their move would be to actually make it the next James Bond car. What do you think of the prototype 00 as the next James Bond car?
I don't think they can afford James Bond.
Just make this. Just spend their whole marketing campaign on getting this car into the next James Bond movie. It's not a bad idea. I heard this on Chris Harris's podcast.
I think that there's some loaded politics with that, though, because we don't know who the next James Bond is.
Yeah.
And if the next James Bond crashes and burns, then this car's going to crash and burn with the next James Bond.
Well, they were saying that the Jaguar should forget about this and actually come out with like a V8 supercharged. Yeah. Or power it with a V8 supercharged.
That design with like the twin turbo V8 that JLR has been using from BMW, that would be pretty cool. And I actually think that would get some love. But I'm not sure that as an EV, it's going to work.
All right. Let's keep going. What's your controversial take?
Well, you had the dead on arrival, and I kind of like that. Okay. So I want to give you another one.
All right.
And people are really going to throw things at me at this.
Okay. I'm ready. Go ahead.
I think that the Slate is dead on arrival.
Yeah, I think that's not that big of a stretch. I'll tell you why. Of course, it's a truck. So sorry, Andre, we're in truck world. But
it's also an SUV.
Yeah, yeah. The problem with the Slate is it's a two-door.
Yes, that's exactly.
Didn't they do their research? Like, I can't think of one. We bought the two-door Defender for $53,000.
Yeah.
And we traded it, not sold it, 6 months later for $10,000 less.
Right.
Because nobody wants a two-door.
Yeah, and that, I mean, you could say that that's the Land Rover problem, but the four-door Defenders, consistently with the same mileage, hold their value pretty well, and the two-doors absolutely tank.
In the Jeep world, in the Wrangler world, like 3 out of 4 Wranglers are the Unlimited, the four-doors, or maybe even more than that.
Yeah, I think it's like 80% even more, 80%, now. Yeah.
Same thing with the Bronco. So yeah, this two-door is just not practical.
Well, this is calling out everybody in the audience. Everybody who's a car enthusiast claims they want a two-door. I mean, that's I see it in the comments, right? Oh, it's not a real Jeep. It's got four doors, right? Oh, a Bronco's got to have two doors. But then when you look at the actual hard sales numbers, people do not buy two doors. They do not buy it because they're just impractical. They're hard to live with. Yeah, well, they have spouses and partners. And
you had a couple two doors Wranglers. How's it getting in that back?
It's a pain in the butt.
It is a pain in the butt.
A pain in the butt. So, I mean, I think I love this concept, right? But there's a reason, like, all the two-door small trucks are pretty much dead, right? You can't get a two-door Ranger. You can get a two-door Tacoma. When's the last time you saw one? I've literally only seen
James.
One two-door Tacoma.
My friend James has one.
Ever. Yeah, our friend James.
he had to look high and low and wide and deep to find it.
Because people don't buy them. Same thing with Colorado. Same thing with Canyons, right? I don't know if you can get a Nissan in a two-door, but if you can, I've never seen one.
So here's my take on this. And this is interesting, right? We're talking about bargains. So how is this a bargain? Right now, they've just taken basically reservations, $100. By the way, Andre had, I think, two of them, and he got so mad because they didn't invite us to the official launch of it.
Nathan was there.
No, they had a pre-launch where you could shoot it without all the people around. So
he got all grumpy, huh?
He got all grumpy, and he basically...
he pulled the plug.
He pulled the plug on his two reservations. So there you go.
Take that, Bezos.
$200 less for you, Bezos.
That's $200 you don't have now.
we still have a reservation. We still haven't pulled it, but... Yeah.
I love the concept of a sub-$30,000 new vehicle, but there's two reasons it's dead arrival. Actually, three.
Okay.
Two-door only.
Yeah.
B, the tax credit's going away.
Should I talk about that?
No, not yet. I don't want to talk about that again.
No. I want to talk about it in terms of the loophole that there may be a bargain here.
We'll talk about that in a sec. But the third reason I don't think this is going to work
is it's
too basic. So this is another one where people claim day in and day out that they want the basic cars. Every single car dealer I've talked to, and we have a lot of friends now that run car dealerships, every single one says they cannot sell base model anything. So we've got our friend Steve.
Yeah, unless you're a fleet.
In Pennsylvania, he was talking about how he has a hard time selling the base models, right?
Unless you're a fleet
buyer. Unless you're a fleet. Fleets are kind of another thing, and maybe this would work with fleets. But people come in, and then they want the features. Ryan Johnson, right, at Johnson's. Yeah. Why don't they have cheap Jeeps, I asked him. Because no one buys a cheap Jeep. I had mine that we actually accidentally ordered two. Yeah. They had a base model Wrangler. Nobody bought it for like 6 months.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting how people like to have electric windows. You would think that this is something for a cheaper car that they could do without, but no.
In the reality,
people like electric windows. I like electric windows.
When it comes to actually buying vehicles, not us fantasizing as car enthusiasts, but putting the money down, people want a radio and people want power windows.
Or how about central door locking, which yours didn't have either? That was a pain.
The Slate might have that.
All right.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal. Under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
So here's the loophole. So the IRS has basically said that if you have a binding contract on an electric vehicle, you can get the $7,500 tax rebate. If it's a binding contract, which means that you've actually put money down or you have traded a car in on something. So the idea is let's say that the car you want isn't at the dealership right now, uh-huh. and it's an electric vehicle, but it's coming.
Yeah.
So if you sign a binding contract, or if you trade in your car, which is also a binding contract, so money or things have exchanged at hands, then you can get that vehicle with the $7,500 tax credit, the new vehicle you're ordering, and they haven't put a time on it, so potentially you could get it in October, November, December, January. They may close that loophole, but you know, with this, if Slate decided to turn that reservation into a binding contract, you could potentially still get that $7,500, but I don't think they're going to do that because they don't even have pricing for it.
No, they're pretty far out. They do have pricing.
But like pricing that they're going to stick with. And because at that point, it's the price that you're going to pay when you have a binding contract. True. So that is a potential bargain buy here if that loophole is usable for this vehicle. I think they're too far out. Let's keep going.
So last thing I want to say about Slate, I do want them to work because I think the design and the concept awesome. But what they need to do, if I was get all professorial here, not that I know anything, but if I was Slate, I would take this design, give it two more doors, and then put a Toyota four-cylinder under the hood. Something no, seriously, something small and basic that's going to run till the end of time. And sell it for $30,000.
I would do what the i3 did at that point. Just put like a motorcycle engine.
Too confusing. People don't understand.
Make it a range extender.
People don't understand that.
Make it a Rex.
Just get rid of the battery thing altogether. Just a 4-cylinder, 2-liter naturally aspirated engine that'll last till the end of time. Go find the Toyota 22RE. I'm sure they still have the bits still lying around. Put that under the hood, and this thing would be a massively popular car.
Make it a Rex. Call it the Slex.
No, horrible. Moving on to the next one.
All right, the one that, of course, is probably the biggest crash and burn, I would say at least of the decade, might be of the century, is the Cybertruck.
Yeah, I mean, so in our last Car-ish podcast, like Scott O'Sullivan from O'Sullivan Law kind of compared it to the Prius, but the better comparison is the Aztec, right? It's too polarizing, and now it's too political.
Except the Aztec, you didn't have the CEO, you know, picking yes. winners in the presidential race.
Yes, that would have hurt the Aztec potentially even more. But I really do think if the politics thing hadn't happened and if they just make it look like a normal ass truck, it's a pretty good product. Like, it does a lot of stuff really, really well.
I'm one of the only people that actually likes the Cybertruck. I'm waiting for it to. I would buy it again. I'm waiting. You know, ours was $100,000. We sold it in the nick of time for like 80,000, I think.
No, 90. I think it was like 85 or 90.
No, we didn't sell for that much. We lost like 20K on it.
Oh.
Yeah, I want to say we sold it for 82.
In three minutes? We had that thing for like 2 weeks?
Luckily, because now we'd be selling it for like 42. so we lost, you know, like 20K on it. While we had it, I really enjoyed it. I liked all the features. I thought it actually worked pretty well as a cyber car, not necessarily as a cyber truck. So if you think about it as a car with a giant trunk that does a lot of things that, you know, a truck would do, I think in that regard, it would be a much more palatable vehicle for many people.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, you know, you can go down the list of all the issues: quality, price, weird stainless steel issues.
I mean, I think for most people, it's just the design. It's just too weird. It's too ugly.
Square steering wheel, looking at the video.
No, I mean, I think that the engineering is great. The steer-by-wire is proven it was okay. Until, did you see that guy took it on the Rubicon Trail?
Yeah, I saw that.
Snapped like 3 tie rods and then had to be rescued, and that wasn't a great look for the Cybertruck.
No, it's not meant to. There's a lot of cars you could take on the Rubicon Trail and do the same thing. Yeah. It's not just a Cybertruck. I think even a Rivian, which is smaller and has a lot more ground clearance, would have a hard time going to the Rubicon Trail because that's a very hardcore trail.
Yes, it is. So I think that the powertrain's really good. The supercharging's pretty good.
What's interesting is they haven't come down in price. They've got that basic one now that's like...
Well, used they have.
Yeah, used. But yeah, new. But so, new, they're still like 70K, even if you want the basic one. And then where they stripped all the parts out of it.
Classic Tesla. Oh, so it's going to start at $39,000.
Yeah, that was also bad.
The basic one starts at 70. So, yeah, I just think it's just too weird, too polarizing. It's too politicized now, and it's. I do think that you're right, though. It would be a great used bargain in like 3-4 years if you could pick one of these up for $15,000-$20,000.
I'd buy a new one for $50K right now if they sold a new one for $50K. Don't get the Tri-Motor. Problematic. You want two real. It's got two rear lockers. mm-hmm. the dual motor, right? So mechanical lockers, not these electronic lockers, which are problematic. And it's got air suspension, so you can lift it. It's got four-wheel steering. It's got steer-by-wire. It's got that giant trunk. I think they also took away the sliding tonneau cover off the basic one, which was great.
Yeah, but the basic one's only single motor.
Yeah, it was great because I went to pick up my friend Steve, and he had all his luggage, and we threw him in the back. It started raining, and it stayed nice and dry. I mean, it's a useful vehicle. It's just not at 70K.
What are you going to do with a single motor Cybertruck off-road, though?
Yeah, it's useless.
Yeah, so the basic one is kind of an interesting idea, but it's...
Tesla, when you get the dual motor down to 50, call me.
Yeah, give it three months, it'll be down to 50.
I don't know. They haven't... the rumors are that there's like 10,000 of these sitting around. The last story about it was that the U.S. Air Force wants to use them for target practice. So where are all those 10,000 Cybertrucks that got made and didn't get sold? Where are they? Are they just rusting or not rusting somewhere?
Well, they're stainless steel, so that does help with the rust prevention.
Corroding.
There you go.
Are they sitting in some giant parking lot? Come on, Tesla, just move them.
Yeah.
Speaking of moving, there's another one that's a little bit older, but it's still crash and burn. Of course, I'm talking about the Fisker Ocean.
Yep, that was more like 2024 those crashed, but the stories behind those are pretty wild, where people were paying $50,000, $60,000 for
more.
Them, and now you can pick one up for $11,000 or $12,000.
Yeah, so the unsold inventory was bought by American Leasing, I think was the name of the company, and they bought them for, I think, anywhere from like $3,000 to $15,000, depending on the condition of the vehicle, and then now they're running all over New York. They're being leased or rented or sold to Uber drivers who are using them as taxis in New York, so this is the new New York taxi now.
Yeah. I mean, I really do think if they had come out with a small, relatively affordable truck like Rivian did, they probably would still be around. But just having another blobby, overpriced, and relatively unreliable crossover just wasn't the move. And they didn't have the dealer network in place. It was a little bit half done, the Fisker Ocean. To the credit, I mean, I can't believe that they got those things out the door. Building a car, any car, is such a monumental task. So credit where credit's due, they got that done. And it did have some cool features, like all of the windows go down, even the little quarter windows. There's one that runs around Boulder with the quarter windows down always, which I think is cool.
The California button,
yeah. And it didn't have like the screen that did the twisty thing. So like there were some cool little gimmicks in the car, but it didn't really move the needle beyond what Tesla or Hyundai or Ford or Volkswagen are doing.
Now the next two are kind of in the process of crashing and maybe burning a little bit. And I'm, of course, talking about Porsche. So Porsche has come out with two electric vehicles, the Macan, or do you say Macan, and, of course, the Taycan. And these are two very good products, but they're kind of – they've got that problem of, like, right car, wrong time, or perhaps right car, too expensive. So let's start with the Macan. They were going to – of course, this is one of their most popular models, right? So they were going to electrify it because of what's happening in Europe. So in Europe, we're off with the Trump administration. We are, of course, off the everything's going electric timeline. But in Europe, they still have to basically, especially like in places like the EU, everything has to be electric by 2035. And so this is why Porsche is rushing ahead with electric vehicles, because the governments are saying that you won't be able to sell internal combustion engines. But the problem with this car, and I like it. I like the design of it. I think it's – I've never driven it. I'm actually going to go drive it in 2 weeks up in Aspen.
Okay.
I think it's cool. A very handsome car. I think it's got a lot of upside. The cool thing about these is Porsche always underpromises and overperforms, exactly the opposite of what Tesla did with the Cybertruck. So I'm expecting the range to be much higher. Mm-hmm. Tom over at – what's Tom's channel? And Kyle both did a range test on the Taycan.
Okay.
And it's supposed to get like 300, and they both got like 360 miles of range. I'm expecting the same thing with this, but they're just too expensive. You know, I don't know if this is a car that's like $80,000.
Yeah.
Or 90, depending on, of course, if you get the turbo or the 4S. But that's a lot of money for a car.
Well, it's a pretty small.
For a midsize crossover.
Yeah.
That's a
lot. Compact, more like it.
Yeah,
it's a pretty small crossover, and
so I'm just worried that it's not going to sell, because right now we're not in a moment of time where electric cars are.
The bigger concern for Porsche is they also now have a electric Cayenne, which is just around the corner.
The 7-8, we'll talk about that in a second.
No, cars not, are going not Cayman, Cayenne SUV.
Yeah,
right. That he's at a Goodwood as well.
Yeah.
So I just think that it's in the U.S. specifically, maybe it's different. I don't know how it's doing in Europe. It's just a selling any EV right now is an uphill battle. But the plus side, like you're talking about Taycans too, struggling a little. Used Taycans are pretty good values, although I heard they're bouncing up a little bit again. They kind of tanked and then they're coming up a little.
I mean, you could get them as cheap as $50,000 if you got not the turbo, but if you got the base.
Oh, potentially maybe even less than that. Yeah, if you get a base Taycan.
But the newest, same problem. The newest Taycans are like $180,000, $200,000. And if they have the same depreciation curve as the previous generation, why would you buy a new one? Why wouldn't you just wait for somebody else to take the depreciating hit?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
When I say that, I mean, you don't have to wait a long time. They've been out a while now, so you can wait 6 months to a year, and you can pick yourself up a Taycan probably for 20, 30, 40% less. I remember the Lucid Grand Touring. I saw one that had 4,000 miles on it, was 6 months old, 135 new. They were selling it for $65.
Yeah.
50% discount in 6 months with 4,000 miles on it.
The best deal out there, though, is the Mercedes EQS, the big eggy sedan thing. It's not much of a looker, but you can, that was like 120, 130 new when I drove it. And you can pick up an EQS used. There it is, little nerdy Tommy. You can pick up that car now for like $29,000 or $30,000.
Yeah, and you know,
and so the design is horrible, but
looks like a bar of soap.
Yeah, but the way that car drives is phenomenal, and the interior is beautiful, and there's a lot to really like about that car, except for the
hyper.
Except for the screen. No, the hyper screen's bad.
The hyper screen.
They had the 450 and the 580. This one I think is a 580. Yeah, it does have the hyper screen, but if you get the 480, you just get a normal size screen, and that's the one you want.
So we know that all the EQs have crashed and burned because Mercedes has announced that they're not building any more EQs for America. They're still, ironically, they're actually built here. So
we're exporting EQs now.
We're exporting EQs to the rest of the world. But the biggest one that kind of crashed and burned and can be a budget buy is what, Tommy? Which one? Which Mercedes EQ? The G-Wagon.
Yeah, but they're still pretty expensive.
I know, but that's another one. Cheap. That's another one that is not selling. Mercedes is one of the executives in a recent news report actually said that it's not selling. And so that's one that if you want a G-Wagon, maybe the one you get is the
electric one.
Yeah.
The one I really like, which is very underrated, is the EQB. That's the little bread
going
van
away.
One.
That's on our list of ones that are going away.
Yeah, I really like that EQB. It holds a lot of stuff. And like I said, you can pick them up for like $35,000, $30,000.
People hate those cars.
I don't know why, though, because they're very good. They're really comfortable. They have pretty good range. They're really
200
fast.
200 miles of range.
Yeah, but I think you could do better in the real world.
Look, the problem, I believe, with any electric car right now is that they're all too expensive. The reason that the Chinese are doing so well with the BYD Dolphin and the Seagull and the Walrus or whatever the hell else they have that's aquatically themed or avian themed is because they're affordable. I think the latest Dolphin is now down to like $12,500. And at $12,500, Tommy, if you could build a car, not like a slate, but actually a real sedan, because I was in Japan, I saw the Dolphin up close.
Sure.
If you could sell a car for $12,500 to $15,000, they would fly off the shelf. All those people who are like, I'll never get an EV, would immediately be buying Dolphins. I personally believe that's my hot take.
I'm not sure.
For $12,500,
Only went 80 miles?
No. They don't go. They go like 150.
I'm not sure that's enough.
Cole, would you buy an electric car if it went 150 for $12,000? If you had a garage, you said.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other car I think that has also been a little bit of a dud. Actually, mm-hmm. And this is not an EV, this is a gas car, is the Wagoneer and Grand Wagoneer.
Mm.
I'm not sure that those have worked as well as Jeep was hoping. They tried to kind of target that really upper-end luxury segment with those products.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I mean, there's a theme here. There's two themes, electrification and price.
Yeah, and both, I think it's just too expensive.
Yeah, I remember the last Grand Wagoneer that I test drove was $130,000.
Yeah, which is nuts for a Jeep.
Yeah, I get, look, if you're going to take on the Suburban and if you're going to take on the Escalade, you got to bring more than just a big, six-cylinder turbo.
Well,
straight six turbo in the Hurricane. You got to bring it, dude. You got to bring it because people love their Slades. They love their Suburbans.
Slades, not Slates.
Slades.
Yeah, with a D.
Yeah, Slades.
No one has a Slate yet.
Yeah, they love their Slades. Okay, I'm trying to be cool. They love their Escalades.
Uh-huh.
And so if you're going to take on that, because that has such a connotation and such a reputation, be it good or bad, it says something about you. It's got to be more than, like I say, $130,000 straight six turbo.
That car was actually, would you go on that launch with me, Cole, the Escalade IQ in San Francisco? I think that was you. That thing's actually pretty cool.
That's what I'm saying. It's got that coolness about it.
Yeah, I also think that the Wagoneer is just in this weird spot where it's not really off-roady, but it also doesn't seem ultra-luxury, and it's definitely not affordable, so you kind of end up in this weird middle ground where it doesn't really do anything all that well, especially for the price.
Well, how about the Wagoneer S, the electric one?
No, that's a crash and burn mess. Yeah, the car is actually, that's one of the quickest cars I've driven all year.
Really,
the way that we had the 500 horsepower version, not the 600. The way that thing out accelerates everything on the road is unbelievable. But there's just no compelling reason to buy one.
You know what I'm being surprises me? I get that, like, us, when I say us, I mean us car enthusiasts love speed.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm shocked at just how many people now who have never considered themselves car enthusiasts, like your mom, like some other people I know, I don't want to name names, that might get me in trouble, how much they love how quick electric cars are. I've heard it over and over again. When people get in an electric car, the first thing that they love is just how fast it is.
Sure.
Well, I should say quick if I'm being, you know, more precise with my language.
So should we move on to the cars that have...
Yeah, let's go.
So car and driver wrote up this list. And these are cars that have died, but you wanted to restructure this.
Yeah, I want to talk about cars that are dying, but there might be a potential bargain because the dealers are, you know, making way now for the 2026s. Some are already on the lot. I was just talking to my man Ryan over at Johnson, and they've already got a lot of 2026 trucks on the lot. And so let's get these 2025s out the door and let's move them. And the first one on that list is the last Acura sedan. Remember this? Acura's had sedan since its beginning, right? The Legend, if you remember back in the day. Mm-hmm. And is it Vigor or Vigor was one of them?
Vigor.
And now it's the TLX. That's going away. And it's actually a really good car.
Yeah, especially that Type S.
Yeah, with super handling all-wheel drive.
Kind of like a budget M3. And it's got...
Did it have super handling all-wheel?
Yeah. No, it was all-wheel drive. That car with those looks phenomenal. Even a standard TLX. I don't think they're killing all the Acura sedans.
Yeah, that's the last one.
What about the Integra?
Oh, yeah, that's right. The Integra is the last.
Maybe that's more of a hatchback.
It's more of a hatch, but true sedans, that's it. By the way, this list has two things in common, sedans and electric.
Both the TLX and the Integra are extremely good. I like both of those a lot. So the TLX, and even Case, who doesn't like new cars very much, said he loved the TLX, the Type S with that twin turbo V6, the all-wheel drive system. It's got a really, really nice interior, the best steering wheel in the business. It's fun to drive. It's well-made. It's going to be pretty reliable. That is a big loss. I don't know why that – so when that car launched, it was very, very, very popular. It had a ton of interest around it, and then that kind of just dried up overnight.
It might be a future collectible.
Yeah, I would bet so.
The infotainment's kind of janky.
Yeah, infotainment's terrible.
Yeah, okay, terrible.
It's really bad. It's not kind of janky. The whole touchpad thing is bleh. But the car drives great. It's not as sharp as an M3, but it's also way more comfortable. It's going to be way better for a daily driver. I think it's probably going to be more reliable in the long run. Very underrated. That's a big loss.
Yeah, so that would be one that I would certainly go check out at the Acura dealership if they have one. And, you know, wheel and deal a little bit, saying, hey, it's going away. Let me get this out of your hair, and you can move on to the... Actually, Acura is having a really hard time selling cars right now. They're struggling.
What's next, Cole? Bring it on down. Audi A4. Now, this isn't really going away.
It's being rebadged as A5.
Which is such a dumb rebrand. Why are they doing that?
So I drove the A5. It's a really good car.
Yeah, but why not just call it the new A4?
Dude, why do they do this thing where, like, the odd ones were electric and the even ones were, remember?
Well, no, but I literally do this for a living, and I have a hard time keeping track
of what Audi's doing. Audi and Infiniti have so confused the marketplace with their branding that people today don't know what the...
And Cadillac. And Mercedes.
Yeah. Well, especially and BMW. Audi and especially Infiniti. Went from M to Q, and now, you know, now the A4 is becoming the A5. It's just, it's a good car. Well, look, I drove the S5. I really liked it.
So Audi used to have terrible naming. They had the 100 and the 2000 and the 5000 and no one understood it. Then they went with A1 through A8. And it made a lot of sense, well, right?
That was a guy who then went to Cadillac.
Yeah, they talked about that on Doug's podcast. Yeah. But what was great about it is for a while there, you knew an A4 was the four-door.
Right.
And the A5 was the coupe.
Two-door.
The A6 was the four-door.
Yeah.
And the A7 was the coupe-ish.
Not anymore.
And then the A8 was the four-door, yeah. Right? So the odds were coupes and the evens were sedans. But now it's just a mess. And then it was started to be a mess when they had those weird four-door versions of the two-door, like the S5 with the four doors. That was a mess.
I would buy the S5.
You like that car that much? Is that good?
I would buy it if it wasn't for the S3.
Okay.
So if you're going to get a sporty sedan, you might as well go for the smaller, more lively one, which is the S3. But the S5 is one hell of a car. And the regular A5 is also one hell of a car. It's stylish. It's got all of those Audi qualities that made the brand kind of the it brand for a while until Tesla took over that crown. But they're starting to get some of their mojo back. I don't know why they're rebranding it. I like the A4. I mean, your mom had one. It's been kind of a brand that has cachet.
A
right?
good-looking car, too, the current one. Yeah, it's just a solid little performer. It's really, really good. So that's one actually I think is going to be missed. So Cole, let's keep going. But A4, that's a big nameplate that's dying. Q8 e-tron. This is another car. Nobody understood it because it launched as the e-tron, right? This was a bunch of years ago. Remember you drove it like, God, that was probably
Audi's first electric
car. 6 years ago, it was very good. Yeah. It was very over-engineered. It was very heavy.
It was very expensive.
Very heavy and very expensive. Then they facelifted it recently and put the Q8 badging on it for some reason. And then they have a coupe version of that as well.
The bargain one to get is the old e-tron. Those are electric car bargains.
Yeah, those are really good cars.
Yeah,
well made.
If you want an SUV that gets close to like 280 miles of range, that was a problem.
They were like 204. The early ones were.
The early ones didn't have enough. But toward the end there, the e-tron's got like to 250. If you want one for like $25,000, $30,000, that is a car I would definitely look at.
Yeah, great cars. Even less than that, I think.
Maybe less than
that. Yeah, for the early ones. So, standard e-tron is really good. Q8, I'm not sure it's going to be too missed. You know, the rarest one of this, people don't know this car existed, but they did an SQ8 e-tron. I think they probably sold three of them. But they have a tri-motor setup. Did you know that?
Did not know that.
One motor in the front, two in the back. Nobody knows it, but SQ8 e-tron.
Future collectible, if you're not afraid of batteries.
Future collectible, yeah. All right, scroll down, Cole. Let's see what's next. X4. So this was the coupe version of the X3, started 10 years ago.
I don't like coupe versions of SUVs.
Yeah, I think these companies are realizing that they went a little too coupe SUV heavy.
Too coupey.
Yeah, and I don't think that the market really is there, especially for like the lower end. Maybe like a X6, you know, maybe that starts to make sense when you're looking at that ultra premium segment. But for the X4, who really wanted a less practical version of the 3?
It's supposed to be for me. So the idea is like if you're a young man or a woman and you've got a family and you've got some money, you get the X3 because it's got the regular, you know, fully realized hatch where you can get all your stuff in there. And then if you're like me and you're an empty nester, thank you for leaving the nest, by the way, then you don't need all that room. And so you want the sporty crossover thing. I always want the room. Why wouldn't I want the room?
Right. Yeah, especially in an SUV. Yeah.
Same thing with the X2. Never liked that.
All right, next. Let's see what we got next. XT4. Okay, this is an interesting one. So this is the small Cadillac crossover.
Yeah, so here, this is really interesting because really this is going to morph into the Optique, right? And then the X6, which is also XT6, is also going away. That's going to become the Vistiq.
Yeah.
Sort of, kind of. So Cadillac has kind of gone in on electric, and they're getting rid of the so I went on the launch of this a few years ago in Seattle.
Seven
years ago, was that how long ago it was? Mm-hmm. And the problem with this vehicle, nothing wrong with it, but it was just kind of forgettable. It was just another unremarkable crossover. Fine. I mean, it had all the Cadillac goodies, but there was nothing about it that would like that would want to make me get all fizzy in it.
No. I mean, I think that my thing with Cadillac and
like a great realtor car for Tucson.
I felt this with Cadillac for a bunch of years now, like their standard high volume cars, you kind of just get the Chevy or get the Buick version. But they're kind of the unique, expensive versions, like the Escalade, the Cadillacs are really good. So I've always liked the big Cadillacs. I've struggled with the small Cadillacs, except the new Optiq. I really like that new Optiq. It's based on the Equinox EV, and it's a lot of car for the money. It's a really good car.
So I would say if you like traditional Cadillacs and you're a realtor in Tucson, go get yourself the next one. Why don't you go down one more? Because you're going to want a little bit more room when you're driving around your potential clients. So you're going to, Cole, go down one more, would you? Next one. Go get yourself this one.
XT6.
Yeah. So that way you've got more room for the families when you're driving around showing them houses. But the same basic problem.
This was like a, the problem with the XT6 is it kind of looked and screamed, I can't quite afford an Escalade.
And actually, I just drove the Vistiq.
Yeah, Vistiq.
Yeah. It's actually good. It's a Vistiq V, I should say.
So the Vistiq V.
The Vistiq.
Yeah.
Yeah. Better than Vistiq, the R.
I drove this car. This was Alex Lightman's very first press launch. We drove this thing in DC.
So yeah. you I did the 4E to the 6?
It's pretty dull.
Yeah, that's the problem with it.
Pretty dull. Had a good third row, though. That was XT6's big party trick. It had a pretty usable third row.
Yeah, kinda, you know what it's like? It's kind of like we just saw this car coming in back to the office today. It's kind of like the Lexus TX.
Yes. It lives in that same world. TX is better, though. That's got an even better third row.
Yeah, where it's luxurious.
Well, these are basically luxury minivans.
Yeah, you
want the door.
Kids go to a private school, and you want to show up with something that's better than a Grand Highlander. Then you go for the TX, or in this case, the XT6. But apparently, now you go for the Vistiq.
Get an XT5 because that's always been a big seller too.
Yep.
All right, Cole. Next, Chevy Malibu. What the hell? They still build the Malibu? I had no idea they still build the Malibu.
Look, the great thing about the Malibu is you can go rent it anywhere.
Yes.
You don't even have to go to the dealer. You just go rent it and live with it for a few days.
Scroll down a little, Cole. When was this thing introduced? Like 25 years ago?
I went on the launch of this car.
I thought that must have been a fleet-only sale
for a long time. It's the last of the Chevy sedans, except for the Corvette.
Well, that's not a sedan.
Sports car. But you see what I'm saying? They're done. Chevy, like Ford now, is done with sedans. So you could probably get yourself one of these at a highly discounted rate if you really want something that is cheap transportation that's been around, so it's pretty sorted. You know, you're going to be completely invisible because people are going to think you just came from a rental car agency.
So started production in 2015.
Yeah, I went on the launch of that.
2016 model.
That's a great name.
Yeah, I mean,
better name than car.
Malibu was a good people mover. Like it held quite a lot of stuff, and it got people around. Next car, Cole. QX50. Oh God.
So Infiniti is also Infiniti and Acura are both in trouble.
You're gonna have to snip. No, you don't have to snip that, Cole. The QX50 is a car.
It's a car. Didn't this have that turbo compression?
Yes, I think it had the variable compression turbo.
Which got a big lawsuit because people said that it didn't get the fuel economy that it was supposed to get.
I think the QX50, if I remember right.
Or am I wrong about that? I could be wrong. Don't sue us, Infiniti. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was that there were issues with it where they could. There's a lawsuit around that engine. Let's leave it at that.
The QX50, I think, is the luxury Rogue.
Okay.
That's all I have to say about
You got one more coming up. Keep going.
Ah, the QX55.
Yeah, what do you got to say about that?
This is a luxury Rogue with less headroom. That's all I have to say about that.
It's a coupe version of the QX50, right?
I'm not even sure if that's true. I think QX60 is a luxury Pathfinder. So if you want a luxurious Rogue, you get a QX50. If you want an interesting – the one thing that is interesting about the car is it has one of the weirdest dances between turbo power and CVT whine. Okay. You've got like two dueling powertrains. Because like it takes some time for the CVT to spool up, and then it's fighting with the turbo, and you get this kind of weird push-pull sensation. So if you want a weird push-pull sensation in a luxury Rogue, you can get a QX50.
Look, I think both Infiniti and Acura are really struggling to sell cars right now. So if you want...
They just don't have a lot of brand identity.
Well, hold on. If you want a reliable, sort of good car... Go to Acura or go to Infiniti because those dealers are probably very bereft of customers right now, and they'd love to have you come in and... buy some of these cars.
I actually think Acura has some cool stuff right now.
They do. I'm not. Yeah. But
MDX is really good.
MDX, RDX, of course.
Yeah, really good.
Two biggest sellers. But they're still struggling with a lot of their...
I'm not sure Infiniti has a lot of great cars, but they do have cars.
Remember when Infiniti had like the really cool sedans?
Well, they had like G35. Yeah, G37 was really good. They had the IPL.
Remember the FX with the little shark teeth?
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was something. Now, that was something.
But you could have a Turbo Rogue. A luxury Rogue. You can actually get a Turbo Rogue now, so I'm not sure why you'd buy this. But if you want a bigger turbo in your Rogue, you get the Infiniti. All right, Cole, what's next? Lexus RC.
Oh, this is just long in the tooth. Now, the RC is a very good car. Once again, we have a sedan, but it's been around for at least 10 years, if I remember right. I went on the racetrack in this car because it had that kind of, the RCF, it had that kind of active rear suspension. So, I mean, the issue with the RC was Lexus has always had a hard time selling sports cars, except for they had a hard time selling the LFA, I guess. They didn't sell. But Lexus has inevitably struggled selling sports cars. They've done really well. Most popular car, of course, is the RX. Now the GX is a smash hit. Even the LX does well. All of their big crossovers / SUVs, they do really well, but they really have a hard time with sedans. Even James's car, right?
The coupe.
Yeah, it's beautiful car. Maybe one of the most beautiful cars you could buy. And they can't sell them. For some reason, they just don't do well with
Lexus
sedans.
Lexus is a hard time. This isn't a sedan again. This is a coupe.
A coupe, sorry.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying.
The RCF, I actually like the standard RC. I think if you just want, that's kind of the standard RC is like a 1970s or 80s experience. And that is like the last of the personal luxury coupes. It's a beautiful, sleek design that's not really built to go fast. That's very comfortable. The RCF is kind of a mess. I've never liked the RCF. It's this weird combination
of... It's a 4-liter V8, right?
It does have a V8.
Yeah.
It's a 5-liter, I think.
Is it I always get that wrong. It's a 5-liter V8.
It's this terrible combination of being incredibly stiff.
Wait. So what does James's car have?
Also the 5-liter V8.
Why do I keep thinking it's a 4-liter V8?
I don't know.
So it's the same as the Coyote.
Well, it's a no.
No, it's
the same
a
as the Coyote.
But it's a
same displacement.
Yeah. I always thought they were. You sure it's a 5-liter?
Yeah.
Am I that wrong? Okay. Yeah. I'm getting old. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, RCF.
Been doing it too long.
Had this weird ability to be incredibly harsh.
Yeah.
Like driving a wheelbarrow. And yet also incredibly numb.
I thought it was actually very engaging and fun on the racetrack.
I just don't like them. I thought, 472 horsepower, 5-liter V8.
I thought it had, you know, the Lexus reputation for quality.
Yeah, I mean, it's a well-made car. I think they look pretty good, but they're just not very good. I think that it was too heavy. It wasn't fast enough for the price. It was too firm and yet also incredibly numb.
I think the problem that Lexus has with their coupes and all of their sports cars is it's the exact opposite that Alfa Romeo has, right? So Alfa Romeo builds these incredibly passionate coupes and sedans that just, you know, break down when the wind blows too hard. And so people get really engaged with them because they've got this, what's that Italian word for love of life?
I have no idea.
Dolce Vita, right? They're infused with this just, you know, life. But when the quality comes along, it's not there. And the two are kind of opposite ends of the spectrum. So if you take a sports car and you make it perfect, it just becomes boring.
Well, people are in love with the LFA. That's the car that everyone's in love with right now.
Yeah, because that's got that formula of they didn't build enough of them. And, you know, everybody wants something that everybody wants the one of one. And that's about as close in the Japanese world as you're going to get to one of one. Because the Japanese don't do like Ferrari limited production cars. And that was the only one that they did.
So I would say get a standard RC. Don't get the F. God, don't get the Laguna Seca F. Remember that thing with the horrible wing?
Yeah, I remember Laguna Seca.
So I think the LC fills that gap of a beautiful, way more beautiful than this. And it's better to drive. And it's got a better exhaust note.
Look, you walk into a Lexus dealership and you ask for this car, the salesman's going to fall off his chair because he's going to want to direct you to the RX, and you're going to be asking about the RC, and he'll be like, oh, we got like four of them in the back. How much off do you want?
Yeah, they sold less than 2,000 of those in 2024.
Exactly.
All right, Cole, what's next? Polestar 2.
I got a story about that one. Remember I got in trouble?
What did you do in the Polestar 2?
Well, they didn't invite us on the launch, and they had this program where in Denver you could, as a buyer or a potential buyer, you could call them up and they would bring the car to your office, and then you could drive it for half a day and then you return it. So I did that, and then I wasn't a potential buyer. I was a reviewer, and apparently somebody got in trouble because I reviewed a car that wasn't meant to be reviewed, that was meant for consumer. Let's say the marketing.
Well, you signed up. They gave you the car.
I mean, anybody
you told them what you were going to do with it. They were cool with it at the time.
Anybody could have done that, sure. Right? It wasn't just me. I mean, we were YouTubers. So anybody with a YouTube channel or a wannabe YouTuber could have gotten the car and filmed themselves driving it for the morning and put it up on YouTube. And that's exactly what I did. And I don't think I broke any rules, but apparently the guy who lent it to me got in a lot of trouble, and then I got pissed off because he chewed me out, so I got him in a lot of trouble. It was a mess. I apologize for the whole thing, but the car is a good car. You know, you can get them used now.
Yeah.
For almost nothing.
Very well made. Very well made. Nice interiors. They're very Scandinavian and kind of, there's a lot of craftsmanship in that car. Interior a little too small. Like, it's a little tough to get comfy for me as a kind of a taller person than a Polestar. But I think that they're incredible. If you just want like a good affordable EV that feels like a $60,000 experience, you can still do that in a Polestar too. They're really, really good.
I think they're made in China though. I think they're subject to like, or they sure. will be subject to 100% tariff. So
yeah, well, that will kill a car real quick.
That'll kill a car.
But yeah. I really like Polestars too. They were kind of confused because Volvo kept trying to brand them a little bit like an SUV, and they were very clearly a sedan with the lift. They were a liftback, really, is what they were.
Well, the problem is Volvo is already kind of near luxury, and now they've created what they think is a luxury brand.
Well,
but I'm not sure it's a luxury. I'm not sure. So Polestar means North Star in Swedish, and it was supposed to be like the brand that lives above Volvo. But Volvo was always trying to become like a near like Mazda was always trying to kind of crawl up the ranks to luxury. And I'm not sure that Polestar in America, at least, has been defined as a luxury brand. I think people just look at it as weird, quirky, Scandinavian electric car.
But very good car.
It's a good car, yeah. The used ones didn't have a lot of range. The older ones.
And they're fine.
I think 250 miles was
something like that, yeah. All right, what's next, Cole? Porsche 718.
Ooh, yeah, so there's supposed to be a...
Cayman and Boxster. Yeah. That's another car. So that's a car that's really loved by enthusiasts because it's kind of, you know, the tossable small Porsche sports car. And I think they're awesome. My only issue with them is that they're still a lot of money. Like, they can be well over $100,000. Well over $100,000.
Well, so what hurt...
And the interior feels like it's 10 years old.
So what hurt... Tommy, if you're a Porsche guy or gal, you know this. What hurt the Boxster and the Cayman was the four-cylinder turbo.
718, yeah.
Yeah, that's what hurt them. And so I think, you know, people want that six-cylinder, the S. They want the goodness of the...
4.0, a 4.0 GTS.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the second they put the turbo and they did the four-cylinder, it just kind of became... It wasn't a good powertrain. I was thinking it was 300 horsepower.
Yeah, but then they did the GT4, which was hugely popular. But
also...
Then they did the...
the different engine.
Cayman RS, which was very popular.
So if you're gonna get one, go for the 4-liter.
Sure.
My dream car, if I had my dithers, but I can't afford it, nor do I think anybody would watch the video, so we're not buying it. But the 25th anniversary
Boxster
has the 4-liter.
Yeah, it's a cool car.
There's like a one that's like the very first Boxster, which is kind of a silver color with a blood red interior. It's absolutely gorgeous. So that would be my choice for cars that I would love to buy. And those were, when they first came out, they were like in the high 90s, and they're still selling used for like 105. And there's a thing happening with Porsche where I think Porsche has lost the plot in terms of its value for money. I always think Porsche was the attainable supercar or sports car, and now they've become unattainable for many people, including the Cayman/Boxster. And of course, there's an electric one coming, supposedly, and I think that's going to be... That might be the same issue we had with the Charger, right? It's dead on arrival.
Scroll down, Cole. Is that the last one?
That's the last one.
Oh no, there's more. Subaru Legacy.
Oh, nothing to say about that. Oh, I have something to say about that. So, you know, after we did that video with Subaru, going back and showing why we got blacklisted, the fine folks at Subaru said we weren't blacklisted and they would get us. This is now 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, that they would get us a Subaru. Have you seen a Subaru in our driveway or in our garage,
Tommy? No, and yet have I seen an email from Subaru. So I think that we may not be on a blacklist, but maybe it's like a dark blue list. So I think there's a good shot there. Yeah.
I don't think we're not going to be reviewing any Subarus anytime soon.
But we will be reviewing this soon, the BZ4X.
It's just a rebrand. They got rid of the four. When I first heard it, I remember I was at the unveiling of this, and the Subaru PR person, what was her name? She was really fun. She's no longer with Toyota. She told me the name, and I had to go back to her like three times and ask her what the name of it was because I had such a hard time revving my head around BZ4X. And then once I kind of got used to it, I kind of figured it out. But now I don't have to worry about it anymore because it's just the BZ.
Well, so It was actually supposed to be a whole line of vehicles.
Yeah.
So BZ stands for Beyond Zero. Means it's electric.
What does 4X stand for?
4 was supposed to be the size. So there's supposed to be a BZ3, BZ4, BZ5.
And what's the X? All-wheel drive?
Or crossover.
Crossover.
So like there may have been a BZ5X and a BZ3C or whatever. But that never ended up happening. So they got rid of the BZ4X thing and now they're just calling it BZ. By the way, I just saw the new Superman and there's a new Toyota BZ in the new Superman movie.
Nice. What is it with car companies?
He doesn't drive it, but it is in the movie.
I think if car companies have a blind spot, it's when it comes to naming conventions. Is it because
well, it's like new, of committees?
It's like new CEOs come in and the easiest way to put their, you know, stamp on the company is to let's change all the names of things because that's what happened with
Cadillac. I just also think committees. There's some data set somewhere that says people like this thing and then they just go with that.
But look, I'll give you an example. I'll give you two, three examples, okay, of car names that just work.
Okay. Right?
Mustang.
Sure. Anything with an actual animal associated with it is pretty good.
Charger.
Yeah.
Right? Anything that's cool and like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or a cool number like 911.
How is that a cool number?
It just is. It's just 911. It's just cool.
How about 405?
Like RAV4.
Yeah. That is not cool.
That is cool. I like RAV4. It works. RAV4 works. RAV4. Better than BZ4X.
How about CRV?
Yeah, no.
How come CRV isn't cool, but RAV4 is cool?
Because RAV is like ravioli, and ravioli's cool.
God. All right, what's next? Volvo S60.
All the sedans are going away.
Great car. Small, fun to drive. They're very good looking. And the V60 Polestar is one of my best favorite cars I've ever driven.
Yeah, but no one's buying sedans, so any sedan is right now.
Yeah, but that's a cool car. And I think they were made in the US.
You think sedans will ever come back?
No.
Really?
SUVs for most people are just better. They sit higher, they hold more stuff, they're easy to get in and out of. People don't care about handling for most people. They're a little bit less efficient, but they're not that much less efficient, and they're just a better form factor for holding people and things. It's closer to a bubble when people just want to be driving
bubbles.
But
there's something much classier about a sedan.
I agree, but people would rather hold their groceries than be classy.
Hmm. All right, keep going. I'm sure it's another sedan.
S90, the ultimate livery car. Pretty much every time I go on a press trip now, I'm in the back of an S90.
Really?
They are very comfy. I think the only people that bought this car was liveries. I've never seen a normal person buy an S90.
I kind of feel like Lincoln should have kept the
Continental.
Continental, yeah.
This is the new Continental.
I think they could have done well with just livery. I think they could have sold, let's say, 20,000 a year with just livery companies.
I like those a lot, though. Very comfy and very...
Well, if you run a livery company...
Premium.
And like, you know, obviously, then you want to get like a Suburban or an Escalade. The problem is those suck gas like crazy.
S90.
They don't. All right.
I think that's the last one.
No, yep. There's more.
That's it.
Is that it?
Yep, that's all we got.
Wait, you sure? I thought there was more.
Well, it's Volvo.
We lost some that aren't there.
Like what?
The Escape is going away and the Corsair.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so the Escape, of course, is going away because of the fact that the Bronco Sport
is selling so well.
And let's face it, the Escape was never the hottest, greatest car. It was always kind of...
The first couple gens were really good.
So there's a cautionary note with the Escape. When you take a car that's kind of square-jawed, like the first Escape was, and kind of off-roady, and then turn it into more of like a mainstream, middle-of-the-road car, it just becomes boring.
Yeah.
And the Corsair, I think it's a Corsair, right? That's the Escape.
Yeah, it's a little one.
Yeah, same issue, basically.
The other one that's going away is the last GTR just rolled off the assembly line for the R35.
Uh-huh.
That's going away. So of all these cars we talked about, which one should people buy now?
Which one? I don't know which one. I think if you say which one should people buy, I'd probably go with the Polestar 2.
I would say the Acura.
If you should.
I really like that.
The one that I would buy a 718, obviously, if I could afford it. If I couldn't afford it, which I right now can't because we bought too many crappy old classic cars now I have to fix. Whole other story there. I would go with the Acura. You're right. The TLX is a pretty damn good car. Yeah, also really expensive, though.
Yeah, but if you can find one in a deal, I'm not sure you could find a deal on one, but... That's the best car on the list, yeah.
Or Cybertruck.
No, God, not the Cybertruck. Someone left us a comment on our Patreon, on the YouTube. Cole, can you want to pull that up?
We got one comment. Woohoo, thank you for leaving us a comment. We appreciate it.
It was on... Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Things are moving slow here.
Uh-oh.
No, it wasn't there, Cole. It was on the actual YouTube stream.
And if you're watching this, thank you for watching it live. Oh, what's the comment?
Oliver says the Macan EV with an off-roady trim would be cool. Love the look of the Taycan. Yeah, like a Cross Turismo Macan, I think, would be pretty neat.
You know, the first Cayenne was very off-roady, and yet, and actually, even BMW built an X5 that was off-roady. And you know that Mercedes still builds an off-road wagon.
Yeah, the E450 all-terrain.
Yeah, yeah. But nobody buys them.
Yeah.
Nobody thinks of German cars as off-roady anymore, except for the G-Wagon.
Yeah, that E450 all-terrain is actually pretty cool, though. I like that thing a lot.
This is a good place if you have any questions for us. If you're out there car shopping and you want to tap into the experience that Tommy and I have had, basically driving every new car except for the crazy ones, then we'd love to help you. So be part of the community, right, Tommy?
Yeah, so leave us comments on Patreon and we will read them on the air and answer your questions directly. So a big thank you to everyone on Patreon, patreon.com/TFLcar, who help us out. You make it possible.
Yep.
Exactly right.
And you saw it first.
Yep.
We'll see you next time. Ciao.
Bye.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.